So this wasn't an ordinary sermon. This was John. And when John spoke, you really listened. Now he had a way of speaking that was, to us, it blew you out of the water. He didn't always make people happy. Stepping on toes, that was a phrase that they used when John spoke. I mean, he was written up in all the little bulletins all over Jerusalem and everywhere, in Samaria and all those places. Began to preach, and he said something about the Word. And it was like, in the beginning. What's that? But this Word was a light of men. Could it be? Could it be the Messiah? You know, the ones that the prophets talked about? For 208 years they spoke. Not many people listened. God's been quiet for over 400 years now. God hasn't even spoken. Could this be? I want to believe. Could this be the one that Isaiah spoke about? That Jeremiah spoke about? No one came forward when he did. Could this be him? Oh, Amos. Oh, the stories my grandfather and great-grandfather told about Amos and how he spoke with power. Could it be? The ones that the Ninevites, the God that the Ninevites all repented. I want to believe so bad. Could it be? Then I was at a wedding. Some of you were there, right? In Cana. You remember what happened? I mean, most weddings go off great, but this one, they ran out of wine. There was this fellow there, called him Jesus. When they ran out of wine, he did the craziest thing. I've never seen it before. He took these barrels full of water and he turned them into wine. And not the cheap stuff, the real thing. You see, there was a family whose legacy and reputation was protected that day because nobody does that and has a good reputation. Crazy. Then there was Nick. Well, a lot of us called him Nick. Nicodemus. He came to Jesus by night. Jesus told him. He said, unless you're born again, you cannot inherit the kingdom of heaven. I want to go to heaven. I want to believe. Then if it couldn't get any crazier, Jesus met a woman. Not just a woman. We called them, I know we shouldn't, but half-breeds. You know, our ancestors who were taken off to Assyria in captivity. And they kind of, we had children, babies with the Assyrians. And we call them Samaritans now. And we don't get along. Matter of fact, we just don't like each other. But this Jesus, he talked to her. He told her about water, living water. And you never get thirsty again. Even broken people could believe in him. Could it be? Oh, I was wanting to believe. He did this thing from Cana all the way to Capernaum, where he healed somebody. It wasn't even there. Can you believe it? Then there were, I would say, let's just say 5,000. Just a rough number. We were all really hungry. And if you haven't had hunger, you don't know what hungry is. I mean, it's not like the middle of the, between what you had early in the morning and later in the afternoon. It's like we were hungry, hungry. And he did this thing. He took this boy's lunch. And I thought, how in the world is he going to do this? How in the world is he going to feed all of it? Not going to happen. He's lost it. But he kept breaking and breaking and breaking. And do you know there was some left over after he fed all of us? Can you believe that? He walked on water. I tried one time. It didn't work. There was a man who had been blind from birth. Oh, they asked him all kinds of questions. But do you know what Jesus did? This fellow, Jesus, possibly the Messiah. He took spit. I don't know how much spit you have to take to make mud. And he put it on his eyes. And I don't, yeah, gross, right? But not for this man. Because you see, he saw after that. After he was washed, he saw. I'm starting to believe this guy. Do you remember? Some of you know. Lazarus. He was a good guy and a friend to a lot of us. And we lost him. He died. I was there. Everybody was crying. Mary and Martha the most. And they began to question Jesus, who had already done a lot of really wonderful, crazy, odd things. You know what he did now? He cried with us. He felt for us. Lazarus is gone. Tell you, you know what he did? He called him out of the grave. He said, move the stone. And he said, Lazarus, come out. And it smelled. Whoo! If you've ever smelled a tomb, I was there. Believe me. Lazarus walked out of that grave. Then he did something that we didn't expect. I mean, that's pretty much top of the line. But then his disciples, the people that were following him, you know, guys like Peter and James and John and Andrew and all those guys, he sat down with them. But before they did, he took off his outer cloak. They began to wash their feet. The one he was claiming to be the Messiah. The one that saved the world. The one that John, when he was preaching, he said, behold the Lamb that takes away the sin of the world. He was on his knees. He was washing feet. I want to believe in somebody like that. But then everything started to spin. Peter began to do some wavering. I was there and I saw it and I heard him. I heard him deny that he was with the Messiah. And not just one time, he did it three times. They arrested Jesus. I saw him arrest him. I saw the trial go on and I followed from back and forth from the Romans to the Jews and all that was going on. And they released this guy named Barabbas, this thug. And yet this one I was believing in was guilty. And I don't think he was guilty. But they wanted something. I believed. They beat him. Not like mama gives me when I've been bad, but they beat him till his back was so bloody. You could see his ribs through the flesh and the blood that flowed from his body. The one I was believing in is now whipped and beaten and the crown of thorns on his head, and they mocked him. Everything is crazy. And they put him on a cross. They lifted it up. You see, they nailed him, his flesh, to the cross. I've heard of the story. Is this him? And he died. He hung there, dead, dead, dead. Was it over? They buried him. But then rumors, 2 days later, rumors started that he was alive. That this one that was gone was alive now. And it was true because he ate with us after the road, when he was on the road to Emmaus. He ate with us. And he was alive. Believe it. I was there. I saw it. And then there was an incident with Peter. Peter that had really, really messed up. We thought he was gone. So he went back to fishing. He didn't make it as a disciple. He'd gone back to fishing. But then Jesus, you know, the one that I told you about that came back, the Messiah, called him to the seashore. And he restored him. I thought he was going to holler at him. I thought he was going to tell him all he did wrong. But he didn't. He wanted him to be part of him, who he was. Oh, he did a lot of other things. Way too many than I have time to tell you about or that the preacher would ever have time to write about. Yeah, I saw it. I believe that Jesus was Messiah. And I believe that he was the Son of God. And as for me, well, I have life in him. Believe it. Believe it.
In many ways, my grandparents' living room was similar to this room in that it had a ledge that kind of went around the wall. And on that ledge is where my grandmother kept all of the things I wasn't supposed to play with. And so guess what things I wanted to play with? All of the things on that ledge. Now, if you remember kind of the decor for the Jeffersons, that's kind of how my grandparents lived. They lived in a pretty fancy little high-rise that was a lot of wealthy people, and I got a lot of dirty looks when I ran up and down the halls making noise. And so all of those nice things were up there. And to get to those nice things, you had corner cabinets that also had nice things. And my grandparents would put all the little stir sticks from their drinking, which I don't recommend because it didn't end well for them. But they'd put all their little stir sticks, and I got to play with those. And I could work my way up to get up that little cabinet to the top of the rail, and then I could scooch down the rail to get to the good stuff. And one day I scooched too far. If you know me, you know that I'm not a big fan of heights. I would just as soon live in a desert as in the mountains. And guess where Nikki wants to retire to, but that's a different story. I just as soon stay flat, but if all the cool stuff is up there, I want to get to the cool stuff. And so I've scooched, and I'm so focused as this little 5 or 6 year old on getting to the good stuff that for a second, I don't realize that I'm 8 feet in the air. And then suddenly I do. And I look down, and falling before me is the floor, and I am scared to death. And I start hollering out, and my grandfather comes running, thinking I've done something disastrous. And my grandfather did not give Jonah his height. My grandfather was 5'6¾", maybe, with big old boots on. And I remember this scene vividly as I am on this 8-foot ceiling, and here is my short grandfather who cannot reach my feet. But he says, "Jump, and I'll catch you." Now, to that point in my life, this was the most important man I knew. I had spent every day of my summers with him, and if I wasn't in school, I was at my grandparents' house, or I was at my grandfather's place of business, and I thought he was the greatest man that ever walked the planet, and all he had to say was, "I've got you." And I leapt off the 8-foot thing into grandfather's arms. What does it mean to really believe in something? See, as the little boy who's sitting up on the ledge, he believes that his grandfather can catch him. He believes that his grandfather, who at that point in his life is the greatest man he's ever known, will do whatever it takes and would move heaven and earth if need be to be able to get grandson safe and sound. And so there was trust, and there was faith, and there was belief. John ends his gospel really two different times. And the first time he ends his gospel is John chapter 20. And after he has finished the story of Thomas that we'll talk about in a second, John writes this. He says, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you might have life in his name. It's so interesting to me that as John is summarizing things and as he's coming to the end and coming to this conclusion, he says, here is what Jesus has done. And we've heard kind of from a third person narrative all of these stories, and we're going to talk more about these stories in the next few weeks. But we've seen these stories and we've seen all that God has done through Christ in the midst of them. And John says, these are here so that you might believe. But why do you believe? And is belief belief or is it acknowledgement? See, faith is something more than what we have. It's something that we do. And if there's one thing we want to try to paint in this understanding of the Gospel of John, which is kind of an eccentric, odd gospel, is that John is trying to say, here is who we have seen, and here is what he has done, and here is how he has saved your soul. And a lot of these people didn't see him. They're at the end of maybe a second generation of Christians, and they're looking at their parents who were the ones who saw him, and now they have got to believe without being able to talk to Thomas. And they've got to believe without being there at the well. And they've got to believe without being in the conversation with Nicodemus about living water. And they've got to understand all of these things, and they have got to have faith. And we're in that same boat. Because I'm not Thomas. I didn't get to stand before Jesus and say, reach out your hands. And I wasn't in a tomb. But I've got to be in a place where I believe that Jesus really is the answer. Because the truth is, as much as their world was in a mess, my world is a mess. And as much as they were in a mess, I'm in a mess. And they had to come to a point where they saw Jesus as the only answer and the only remedy. And until they did, they never fully believed. But once they did, they had life. I love that story of Thomas in the upper room. You know, it's one of those stories that were too hard on Thomas. And actually, Michael's going to preach the Thomas story because you've heard me preach it a couple of different times. But Thomas, when he finally does see those imprints on the hands and nails, Thomas says, my Lord and my God. And I've always thought this is Thomas's belief. And suddenly, Thomas's belief is certified. That now he can physically see and he can touch. And it's not just some story that some women have told. And it's not just the other disciples who have said, we have seen. It's I can touch. And Jesus is going to say, because you've seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have still believed. And that's everybody in John's audience when he's writing in 70 or 80 AD. And that's everybody in our audience. Because we haven't seen. And yet we're still called to believe. Or that story as you kind of go backwards in the Gospel of John where Mary is walking around the garden, around the tombs. And as she's walking around the gardens that are there around the tombs, she's really going there to mourn. And she hears this voice. And this voice calls out, Rabboni. And now Mary has been with Jesus for a long period of time. And if we read from the other Gospels, she has given a lot of her own stuff so that Jesus' ministry could thrive and do what needs to be done. And that voice calls out. And just like you can hear the voice of those special to you from a million miles away, Mary can hear Jesus. She hears that voice and she grabs him and he says, let go. And she runs and she says, I have seen the Lord. And her belief in Messiah is cemented. Or then there's two other sisters, another Mary that comes on the scene, and Mary and Martha are at a tomb and they're mourning, and Jesus will say to them, "I am the resurrection and the life, and he who believes in me will," what does he say? "Will live." Something about believing in Jesus. "Do you believe this?" And she says, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ. You are the Son of God. You are the one who was to come into the world." And so here is Mary in front of Jesus, and her belief is empowered by trust. And this is not after the words come out of Jesus' mouth to come out. See, it's one thing for Mary to say, "I believe you are the Christ," before the miracle, or after the miracle. It's another thing to believe it before it. And she believes it before it. Then you get another woman earlier in the book that says in John 4, verse 25, "I know Messiah is coming, and when he comes, he will explain everything to us." And then Jesus declared, "I who speak to you am he." And then later on in that story, after there's more conversation and maybe some more some more intimate discussion, she's going to go back to town and she's going to tell a story. And I don't know how that story goes, but my assumption is it goes something kind of like this, that the woman goes back to town and she says, "I was at the well and I was getting water and it's the middle of the day, and you all know why I was there at the middle of the day, because I don't want to be with you folks because you laugh at me. And I'm there in the middle of the day and this guy leans against a rock and we start talking about water and we start talking about religion and we start talking about worship. And might this be the Messiah?" And then the crowd's going to say in verse 42 to the woman, "We no longer believe just because of what you said, for now we have heard for ourselves." See, all of these are stories of belief in some form or fashion. They're stories of belief from those who were in this intimate circle with Jesus, who were part of his day-to-day activities. And they're stories of those who were out on the fringes and who were met by Jesus as they went to and fro. But one of the points that all of them make is, here is somebody that's at least worth listening to. And if you're in church, then you've listened to Jesus before. And if you're in this room, even if it's for the first time, you at least have got an inkling that Jesus must matter a little, or you wouldn't go to a church that wore his name. But is he something to believe in? Not a little bit. I think one of our greatest problems in the 21st century church is we believe a little bit. But I don't think you can believe a little bit. If I'm the little kid on the ledge and I believe a little bit in my grandfather, I am not jumping off the ledge. I'm going to stay stuck on the ledge until somebody I believe a bunch bit comes. All through the Gospel of John, Jesus uses the word believe. John uses the word believe. They never once use the word faith. And I think that's kind of interesting. Belief and faith in Greek are from the same root words. One is a verb and one is a noun. Faith is what you have. I have faith that Barry made these glasses for me, and thus I can see Barry clear as day. I have faith. He was a good eye doctor. He still is a good eye doctor. He fixed me up right. I believe in what he's done. We've got to figure out how to have faith. See, in the bottom line in all of the book of John is all of these kind of goofy characters that John brings in and all of these kind of funny I am statements. And John is weird. And said he'll weave in a narrative, and in the midst of a narrative there'll be a big long discourse that kind of illustrates the narrative, and then he'll come back and there's this and there's this. And it's an odd gospel that reads different than the others. But yet in the midst of it he's saying, do you really want to believe in Jesus as the Son of God? So the original audience needed to ask themselves, is following Jesus worth the cost? Is it good enough? Because I might lose everything. Okay, let's take a step back into John's world Again, if John is writing this book 60, 70, 80 AD, and kind of scholars are all thinking that's somewhere in that range, I think it's probably more toward 80 than it is to 60. But we're talking if Jesus dies at 30, this could be 50 years later. Life expectancy then was you didn't live to be 100 like you do now. So you got a group of second generation and maybe even third generation Christians who now are starting to feel a little pressure. And the pressure is coming from Romans, but the pressure is also coming from the inside. And John, who is still this aged man who is still preaching at what we assume might be almost 100 year old, is saying, do you want to give everything to him? Because it's going to cost you. Some of those stories he'll tell. Tell me, does it cost Nicodemus anything when he comes to Jesus at night and the story ends with him helping Joseph of Arimathea bury him? I guarantee it cost Nicodemus something. Did it cost the blind man in John chapter 9 who was then kicked out of the synagogue? Of course it cost him something. And they had to answer the question, is it worth the cost? And 2,000 years later, if we're really going to believe, we need to ask ourselves the question, is it worth the cost? It might cost you your job. Some of you, it cost you your families. You came to a point of believing in Jesus, and you realized that the only answer was to give your life to Him. And in the giving of your life to Him, your parents turned their back on you. And it cost you a bunch. And some of you, it's cost finances, and some of it's cost promotions, and some of you, it's cost a thousand other things. But are we going to have faith that dares and that counts the cost and says, look at what it's worth? My guess is at the end of this story that is our story, we're going to have a similar end to Thomas's story. Thomas is never spoken of again in the New Testament. The last phrase we hear off of Thomas's lips is, my Lord, my God. And there's going to come a day, I believe, when we stand before Him, and the phrase that's going to hopefully come off our lips is one that says, my Lord and my God. Because we have believed. It's going to be a fun journey with some great characters and some cool stories and some weird stuff and some stuff we may not be able to fully explain. But I hope at the end of our journey through John, it will call you to have a faith that is far deeper and far more daring than it ever was before. So join us the next couple of months as we study. Okay, Reuben has got a song that's selected. There are elders in this room. We are at the front. People will be at the back. If you need us for whatever reason, maybe it's your marriage or your job or you're sick, or maybe most importantly, you're at that point where you really believe and you want to do something about it. If you need us, let us know as we stand and as we sing.